We have to wait till Rhoda sits down. Good evening. Once again, I have good news for you. You have a friend, a wonderful friend, that loves you very much and wants to give you everything that you want. And this friend also is very rich. So you can use that, and you can use your friend. Isn't that wonderful? You finally have a friend that you can use. You can use that friend to bring into your life all the wonderful things that you think about, the things that you really want. So remember that you're never alone, that you have a friend that has a wonderful influence. And you can use that influence to help you in your life. So this thing that we call God, this thing we call the universe, this thing we call good, make it your best friend. And use that friendship. Because it's wonderful. And there is no other friend, regardless of how long you've had a friend, or how wonderful you think an earthly friend is, this friend is bigger and better. So use it. I have often said that God is mighty. And you hear that constantly if you go to church, that God is mighty. This is absolutely true. But I'm here to tell you that God is not only mighty, God is useful. Use God. There is no sense to have something that is mighty and then not use it. You see. You all have electric lights in your home, do you not? Wouldn't it be ridiculous to have them and not turn them on? And that's what many people do with this power that we call good. Each and every one of us has it. Each and every one of us has the exact same amount. I do not have more than you have. I may use it more than you use it. But I turn it on. I don't just sit and think about it and say, isn't that nice? Oh, yes, it's nice that God's mighty. Where the heck does that get you? Doesn't get you anywhere. But if you know that God is useful, it'll get you everywhere. So start to do that. And start to make this thing that we call God a friend of yours. Tom, who's not here tonight, was reading a book called The Impersonal Life. It's a small book. It's been out for years. And it's absolutely true that this thing that we call God is impersonal. Because why? Because it never shows favorites. It shows everyone the same thing. It gives everyone the same thing. But you have to make it personal to you. You're the one that makes it personal. You're the one who says, oh yes, my friend can do this. Good can do this. God can do this. The universe can do this for me. You see, remember the other week when I said so many people go to the well with a thimble. You know? Go to the well with the biggest container you can find. And fill that container up. And when that container is filled up, get a bigger one. You are never going to be able to drain the well. When I was a child, my brother used to love to wash the car. And in the summertime, my father would say, Jack, the well is going to run dry. And my brother would say to my father, you have said that every summer, and it's not true. The well will not run dry. And that's what we're talking about here. We're talking about a power, a source, that will never run out. It will never run out. It's infinite. And it supplies you with everything you want. I want to back up. We started the first week in December, if I remember correctly, was being thankful for things. And what I wanted to tell you about that, yes, we sat around and were thankful for what we have. You must also be thankful for what you want, what you desire, as though you already had it, as though it were already done for you. Because once you have an idea, once you have anything in your mind, it is already done. Everything that you want in life is already done. You just haven't made it take clothes and dwell among you. But you will learn to do that. So what you do is you give thanks. You give thanks already for your life. You give thanks for that life you're looking for. You give thanks for that career you want. You don't wait till you have it and then say, oh, thank you. You say thank you right now. And then you live in anticipation, in enthusiasm, and in joy that, my goodness, that's done for me. Isn't that wonderful? And I'm so thankful for it. That's how you do it. I also want to back up and talk a moment about Tom. Tom was the young man who showed his prosperity and gave money out in the class. And I'll talk one moment about that, because that was a wonderful leap of faith. And when you want something, you have to take a leap of faith. And when you give out money like that, you must realize that it will return to you abundantly. It will always return to you. I consider that what I call priming the pump. Does everyone know about a pump? We used to pump water. When the water would not come up, we primed the pump. How did we do that? We put water down the pump. That caused a vacuum which brought the water up. And many times you have to prime something. If you want something, you prime it. You give it away already, knowing that it's going to come back to you, instead of saying, oh, I only have $10 to my name. I can't give that away. I would immediately give the $10 away and claim 100-fold. I would do that. That's priming the pump. That's priming yourself, you see? And that is what Tom did. And I'm sure we're going to hear wonderful stories about that money coming back to him. Money will always come back to you. 20-some years ago or more, I took a friend of mine, Betty, to a seminar with my friend Joyce Reynolds. Many of you hear me talk about Joyce. Joyce is the one that's able to youth herself. She looks marvelous. She's considered a motivator of one or a thousand. She was giving a seminar, so I took Betty to that seminar. At that time, now you can tell how long it's going to be, because the seminar for the weekend was $50. We'll find you a chair. Oh, there is one right there in the corner. We won't make you wear a hat. So anyway, it was $50. Now, I gave that $50 away. To this day, that $50 has brought me in over $20,000 from Betty. Betty made her transition. And she said to her husband, "You must take care of Dallas." And he does. Every month. Every month he sends me $500. $500. You see how it multiplied? And now it's multiplying even more. And I say, "Thank you. More, please." And I use that money. That's how it works. That is how it works. Now, I think that has caught you up. Now, Andy, who's not here tonight, also wants me to go back and do remind you of different things. And as the class grows, I have to do that. So in January, we'll go back and we'll talk about the ideas. Is everyone still writing, "God bless and multiply this money" on their checks or something to that effect? Remember, I've used that. Now, I know that's 30 years. And in that 30 years period, I have never run out of money. And I have been out of work many times. But I've never run out of money. It's done with the belief, which we're going to get into also. Okay? So now, I think we're caught up. Is anyone confused? I hope not. So with that said, I will do a spiritual mind treatment. When I use the word spiritual mind treatment, it's just a form of prayer. We are taking time out to say something wonderful about ourselves, to affirm or reaffirm what this universe already knows about us. I'll do this in the first person. And all those who are willing may take it for themselves in the first person. I know perfectly well that I am one with the only power there is in the universe. I know that that power created me. And I know that the creator and the creation are one and the same thing. Therefore, I have the power. I have the power to create in my life. And I create in my life with my beliefs, with my viewpoints, with my attitudes. So I watch my thinking and I change my thinking so that I am able to bring prosperity and abundance into my life. And that includes money. I see money coming to me from everywhere in the universe. I open every channel so that money can flow to me. I have streams of money coming to me constantly. And I am grateful for that. And I know right here and right now that I am prosperous, I am successful, and I have money. And I let that be so, and so it is. Everyone needs money. We need money because money is freedom. Please remember that. You don't get very far in this life without money. Money will make your life easier. And you could all have it. And you can have it abundantly. Tonight's talk, excuse me, is about appearances. And I want to tell you, when I come up with the titles for these talks, I always ask for help from whom? My friend. And I wait for things to happen. And then I take notes. So I was waiting all week, and I thought my friend must have left town because it was very slow in coming. But I found something today in my reading. And this is from the Course in Miracles. And many of you are familiar with it, and I think attend. I know, Rhoda, you go, don't you, to Course in Miracles. Course in Miracles is a very wonderful teaching. And it is a metaphysical teaching. It uses the Holy Spirit a great deal, and it uses Jesus a great deal. I have nothing against that whatsoever. I believe that Jesus was truly one of the master teachers. Now, notice I say one of the master teachers. Some people say the greatest of the teachers. Perhaps that is so. But it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter if you believe in Jesus. What matters most is that you believe in yourself. That is what counts in life, is to believe in yourself. I believe everything that Jesus said, but I believe very little that was said about him. You're saying, I get rid of the manger and all that stuff, you know, and wise men trudging across the desert, you know. It's all right. You may believe that. Remember, we're able to believe anything we want. But we have to choose our beliefs so that we can have what we want in life. When we don't have what we want in life, the problem is never on the outside of life. If you don't have money, the problem is never money. Money is never an issue. The issue is, what do I think about myself? What do I think about money? Do I think money is dirty? Do I think only drug people have a lot of money? Am I afraid to have a lot of money because then I'll have a lot of responsibility? Look at the taxes I'll have to pay. You have to figure out what you're thinking about money. And then you have to what? You have to love yourself. You have to know that you are worthy, that you are deserving, and that you are completely lovable. Would you, there's a pillow here.
You got it? Yes. You go ahead.
And if more people come, we'll get more pillows. Oh, trading seat. So anyway, this was just this morning, and it was. Would you read that? Because this one, my tomorrow I'm supposed to get my new glasses.
What we see is not the truth.
That's it. Read that loud. What we see is not the truth.
We can only see what our minds project, and unless we are seeing solely from the perspective of the Holy Spirit, we are not seeing what is true. How do we know who is seeing for us? The answer is simple. If we are feeling peaceful and forgiving of all who cross our path, our eyes are being focused by the Holy Spirit. If we feel fear or agitation, if we are harboring thoughts of attack, the ego is standing watch. Occasionally we wonder if we'll ever wholly understand the Course's message. How can things we touch not be real? It helps to remember that our bodies serve solely as our vehicles for this journey we're making to enlightenment. They have no other purpose. One day they will die, existing no more. Are they real? The same is true for all material objects. They aren't eternal, changeless entities. Only our oneness with God is real and eternal. When I look upon my world today, I'll seek to see beyond what the ego projects.
And that's our problem, is our ego is always projecting something. It's always telling us what is not really true. You know, we have to learn to think things completely differently than we've ever learned. I also ran across this. You do not see things the way they are. You see things the way you are. You see always things the way you are. That's why two different people seeing the same thing describe it differently, because it's all done on the inner. Remember how many times I tell you that your eyes see nothing. It's your mind that's seeing. Your eyes see nothing. So you have to learn to change your concepts inside. When you change your beliefs, your attitudes, and your viewpoints, your outside world changes because you're seeing it differently. We all look through filters, and those filters are our beliefs. If you believe that you do not deserve money, that you cannot have money, that no one in your family ever had money, it's very unlikely that you're going to have money. Very unlikely, because the inside and the outside must match each other, or you would go crazy. The mind would go crazy. And you prove that to yourselves all the time. You're absolutely delighted when you can prove yourself right, are you not? Well, you see, you can justify and prove yourself right on anything. You can say that, oh, he's a dirty bum. And that person will be a dirty bum. You see? How many people read the book Blink? All right. Do you remember what all that was about? The author who wrote that, Malcolm somebody. When he had great big Afro hair, he got stopped all the time by the police. When he had combed hair and nice, he didn't get stopped. Because we judge by appearances constantly. We see somebody and we say, well, they're no good. They're just no good. There's another example in that book about a salesman who was able to sell everything that came in. A car salesman was able to sell to everybody that came in. Why? Because he worked in a rural place where farmers came in all dirty and so forth, and the rest of the salesmen, oh, he doesn't have a cent to his name. The man went over, approached him. Of course, if you know farmers, most farmers have a great deal of money, you know. And they would buy, and he sold, because he always looked beyond the appearance. You must look beyond the appearance, and we do that constantly. We say, oh, don't bother with them. That won't get you anywhere. It won't get you anywhere. But what do we know about that whole thing? We have to look at everyone as what? We have to look at everyone as God. We have to see God in everybody. We have to see this life that we call God in everybody. You see, if it's absolutely true that we live, move, and have our being in the only mind, if we live, move, and have our being in the only life, then we can't say, well, that person is different. You see, what does it boil down to? One. We're all one.
Unity.
Yes, unity, always unity. It always boils down to that. So we try not to judge by appearances. We try to see everything with right judgment. Right judgment meaning that everything is connected. That we're all connected together. Does anyone know about the Heifer Project? Heifer. Yeah. Heifer meaning cow?
Yes.
Yes.
Are you talking about Heifer International?
Yes.
Yes, I
do. Yes.
I get some of them.
Yes. They're wonderful people. And they have a motto. They give people animals in all underprivileged countries and so forth. And then that person receives that as a gift. They must give two. They couldn't give just one, because when it has a child or a calf or whatever, they give that calf to the next person. And this goes on and on and on. Well, they gave them to some rural people in China. They gave them rabbits. Now, the man now has 5,000 rabbits, and he's given them away to other people, and the whole economy. Then they teach them how to farm organically. I mean, it's just a wonderful thing. And it's one of the projects or one of the models that work, where our government models just go in and they dump a bunch of money. Usually those programs do not work. This one happens to be working. So now all of a sudden people are looking into that and seeing what that's all about. But the reason why I bring that up is because the man who raises the rabbit said the reason why it works in China and the other places, this heifer project, is because their concept is universal. Their concept is helping other people. Because the Chinese man said, because we are taught that if anybody in the community has a problem, we all have a problem. See? If anyone has a problem, we all have a problem. So we learn to work together. They happen to realize that we're all one. You see, we can have a problem without us all having a problem.
There was a girl who was given a goat in Africa, and she started doing goat pops, milk and cheese and for the whole village, and started selling things. And she's going to Harvard now. She funded getting an education. I mean, she was from the most impoverished city in Africa. It was just a dreadful place. And she's really going back to help the community, giving more. It's really a wonderful, wonderful group. If you ever get a chance to give money to them or buy a gift, you know, you could buy a flock of chickens and it'll go to an impoverished family and it'll help them so much, or an animal, or a cow, or a...
Rabbits. Goats, goats, rabbits, chickens.
No, they also had a water buffalo.
Yes, the water buffalo. Oh, camels. Mm-hmm. They gave that one group a camel. And now they have all these camels.
It's really great.
But they learn as a community then, and they all go together. I mean, it's a fabulous thing. So if you want to give a gift or anything, look into that. It's called the Heifer International, you know. And heifer meaning cow.
It's really a great
It's a great thing. So, anyway, I don't know why I brought that up, except the whole idea of judging always by appearances and saying that these people can't, they're too poor, they're this, they're that, when here they were able to pick themselves up by their bootstraps simply because somebody gave them a project. They gave them a cow, a chicken, or whatever they gave them, and then they became part of the community, and they keep sharing that, and that keeps going out. Now, this is the way we're going to solve the problems of the world, when we realize that we're a global community. A global community. How many people saw the Pope John's story on television? I saw parts of it too. I saw the last part, I think last night or Monday night, whenever it was on. Now, I am not a fan of Catholicism, nor am I a fan of the Pope, but the man was a great person. There was a story in there that when he was 10 years old, he said to his friend, who wasn't allowed in the church because he was Jewish, he said, "Don't get upset. You have to remember that we're all children of God. That we're all children of God." Now, I will back up one moment and tell you why I am not a fan of the Pope. He did marvelous work, and a lot of work that we don't even know about, with solidarity, with the Iron Curtain, with all that stuff. I mean, he was very political and had a lot of clout. But his idea was suffering, you see. And he allowed himself, people to see him suffer with his Parkinson's disease and with his broken hips and whatever else he had, because he wanted people to realize that everyone has to suffer. But that is one of the tenets of the Catholic religion, suffering. It's also the Episcopal Church. I went once went to an Episcopal church, and the priest got up and said, "Today the sermon is on the suffering Jesus." I got up and walked out. I got up and walked out. I absolutely firmly believe that you can go through this experience without suffering, without pain, without sacrifice. No creator would create human beings, put them on this plane of action, and then say, "Forget it. I'm not helping you anymore. You're all awful. And you have to figure it out for yourself." This thing we call God would not do that to you. But we think that because race mind tells us that. Try to give up the idea of race mind. Learn to hear what race mind is doing to you. And you hear it all the time. Remember that commercial for some kind of an insurance, and the man stands up and says, "Because trouble always comes," or something like that. Why do you think, you know, you cannot believe that trouble always comes? You don't save for a rainy day. You save for an opportunity day. You know. Don't save for rainy days and think, "Oh, I have to save, it's going to rain." If you think that, it's going to happen to you. Remember the story of Job in the Bible? You know, what he thought came upon him. What you fear most will always come upon you. What you love most will come upon you. But for some reason, the world has convinced you that fear is the thing. And people can manifest with fear faster than they can with love. Because people believe in fear more than they believe in love. And yet everyone in here wants to be loved. Everyone wants to be loved. And I bet 10 to 1 most of us fear being loved. Because this little ego mind of ours says, "Don't do that. They'll take something away from you. Be standoffish. Don't give in. Go ahead and give in. What's the worst that could happen? The relationship may not work. But do it. Love all the time. And start by loving yourself." How many people in here are still doing wonderful, wonderful, wonderful me? You have to do that every day. And Wesley, finally. Did anyone happen to see the blurb on television about the Kennedy Awards at the Kennedy Center Life Achievement Awards?
Which one?
Well, it's the one with Tina Turner. It's not on yet. It was just advertising that it's coming on. And everyone knows Tina Turner. Mm-hmm. I'll tell you a cute story about that. My best friend Barbara, when I lived in New York, loved Ike and Tina Turner. I thought it was one person. She would always say, "Ike and Tina." And I thought, "Oh, Ike and Tina." With the name. I didn't know it was two people. But anyway, everyone knows her story. And everyone knows, you know, that she was an abused woman, that she was on dope, that she did everything. But she got herself out of that. One of the things that helped her get out of that was Buddhism. And she chanted a great deal. Chants, by the way, are the same as affirmations. They're the exact same thing. But the thing there was, she stood up, and they said something to her. I think Oprah was there doing something. And what Tina said was this. I am very proud of myself. I am very proud of myself. We have to learn to be proud of ourselves. We have to learn to be proud of ourselves. And how do we learn that? By, first of all, not listening to that ego mind that tells you to hold back, that tells you not to do something, yada, yada, yada. I'm sure that Tom's mind drove him crazy when he decided to give that money away. It didn't. It didn't once say to you, now, Tom, maybe this is too much. Well, then I'm citing you for sainthood.
Actually, when I created it, I told myself that I would give 10% to you, and then I created that I would just take that 10% and create it for everybody. So it was really not...
Well, that was nice. I'd have gotten it all. Honestly.
You share.
Darn it, I had to share. But your mind, you have to look what your mind is doing to you, when it, especially when it comes to money. You have to see what it's doing. And you have to be proud of yourself for what you did. I hope that you're very proud for doing that. That was a wonderful thing to do, and it was a wonderful example.
Thank you. Can I have more?
Yes, you may have more. Yes, always. It's more, more, more. So we don't judge by appearances. How many people are familiar with, when I see it, I will believe it? When I see it, I will believe it. Now you see what that is, do you not? That's absolute race mind, up one side and down the other. And we've been taught that since childhood. How many times do people say, well, when I see it, I'll believe it? You have to believe it, and then you'll see it. You see, this thing about race mind, it's very easy to figure out. Whatever race mind says, just turn it around. Because race mind lies to you. Race mind will never tell you the truth about anything. This teaching turns race mind right upside down, always. It always does. How many people remember being a Boy Scout? Remember what was Boy Scouts doing?
I was never a Boy Scout.
You know, but you were maybe a Girl Scout, but you'll understand. Keep up with me. I remember your other daughter. Thank God she's not here tonight. Remember we were taught God first, others second, and self third. That is what?
Hui.
Well, it is hui, but that is race mind, and that's what the race teaches out there. Never be number one. Because if you're number one, you must think too much of yourself. My mother had a wonderful expression. It was also mean and hateful, but it was wonderful. And it took me years to figure it out. And here's what, if somebody did wonderful things or got too big for their britches, she would say, well, they think they're the big I am. Remember, I am that I am. Mm-hmm. It took me years to realize the big I am. And that's what people are afraid of. Go ahead and be the big I am. What's the expression we use? All that I am is God. But I am not all that God is. You are the big I am. It can be no other way. So when the world says to you, well, you're just full of yourself, say, thank you very much for noticing, and go on about your business. The world wants you to shrink. It constantly wants you to shrink. And we all do that. How many people remember Marianne Williamson? We said that was our biggest fear, wasn't it? Our biggest fear is not that we're weak. Our biggest fear is that we'll find out how strong we are. We'll find out what we really can do, and it will scare the bejesus out of us. Go ahead and be frightened for a minute and do it. Be big. I always say, you know, that I don't quote the Bible, and then I go right ahead and always I'm quoting the Bible. I think the Bible is a wonderful book, by the way, and it has wonderful things in it. And that, and the, it has a lot of stuff in it, too, that isn't so wonderful. But it does say in the Bible a lot of things, which just went out of my mind. But it'll come back. It will come back. Well, it's always, it's done unto you as you believe. And that is the whole basis of this teaching. The whole basis of this teaching is always, it's done unto you as you believe. Not as I believe, but as you believe. And the most wonderful thing about beliefs are they can be changed. You can set out and change your belief. This is the wonderful gift that the Creator has given you. How many times have I told you you did not come to this plane of action without a toolbox loaded with tools? And one of the tools that you have is the idea that you can change your mind. You do not have to live in the past. You do not have to live with what your parents told you. You do not have to live what your former religion told you. The idea is to learn to think for yourself. I tell you this. This teaching that never tells you what to think. It shows you how to think. It shows you how to think. And then you take that and you learn to think what? Good things about yourself every minute of every day. And when the little ego mind says, well, you're stupid, you're dumb, look what you did, you made a mistake, you did this, you did that, say, you have never been my friend. You have never brought me any good news. Now go back to the nothingness from whence I came and turn to your other friend. Your other friend has never held anything against you. Your other friend would never tell you anything bad about yourself. Your other friend immediately helps you. Always has something good to say about you. And of course, we know that the other friend never forgives. Big statement. Why doesn't your friend never forgive? Because your friend has never condemned you. This thing we call God never condemns. The ego mind condemns. You condemn yourself. You're the one who says, I'm awful, I'm mean, I'm hateful, I'm this, I'm that. This thing that we call God says, you are the most wonderful human being I have ever created. You are truly the beloved in whom I am well pleased. when you remember those things, your life becomes wonderful. And your life becomes filled with joy and happiness. This is absolutely true. And I ask this question all the time. How many people in here, since they have started and since they have learned to like themselves, to love themselves, has made more money? Absolutely works. Absolutely works. If there's anyone who doubts that, try it for yourself. Just try it for yourself. I mean, if you don't have anything now, what are you going to lose? You see, you can't lose anything. So you might as well try it. Try this thinking. The reason why this thinking, which we call new thought, which has been around, well, it's been around for over 2,000 years now. I'd say probably 2,500, because the Essenes knew about this, and they were 500 years before Christ, or before Jesus. So they knew this idea of new thought, meaning learn to think differently about yourself. Learn to stop judging by appearances. See God in everything and in everybody so that you're not torn. How many people, my father taught me this, he always said, Dallas, don't criticize anyone until you have walked a mile in their shoes. Everyone on this planet is doing the very best they know how to do. We're all doing the very best we know how to do. And we can raise the other people up, but we don't judge them. We don't say, oh, aren't they horrible? Aren't they stupid? Why didn't they do this? Blah, 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 blah. We look at them. We see that we're one with them. I always say to myself, I am so grateful. I am so thankful that I have decided not to play that role. Not to play the role of the person who has to stand on the street corner and get cold and homeless. So many people are afraid of being homeless. They have tons of money and they're afraid of being homeless. Somebody said to me once, Dallas, what would you do if you became homeless? I said, I would decorate underneath the bridge. I'd fix it up nicely. I'd fix it up. So we don't judge by appearances. We see those people and we're thankful. I get up when I hear somebody on the news, which I turn off, they just killed somebody. And everyone's appalled. I'm not appalled. I'm deeply saddened that that happened. But I'm absolutely delighted and thankful that I did not choose that role to play. I did not choose that role to play. Each and every one of us chooses what we're doing. Your mind may say, oh no, my mother made me do this. No, my boss made me do this. No, this made me do this. That's a choice. That is a choice. You can decide the role you want to play in life so that you'll be able to stand up one day and say, I'm very proud of myself. And if Tina Turner could turn her life around and get out of the suffering, and that's the other thing she said. She said, I suffered. I no longer do. I no longer do. She got out of that cycle of suffering. And I see people on that wheel of suffering thinking that that is what it's all about. That is what it's all about. Life is not that. We have to fill ourselves with joy, with happiness, with excitement, so that we can live this wonderful life. This man we call Jesus said, what? I've come so that you might have life and have it more abundantly. But everyone forgets that, because they remember what?
He suffered on the cross.
He suffered on the cross, and he also said the poor will always be among us. He did not say, I love the poor. Somebody else did that and got that confused. So a lot of people think, I have to be poor, and then God's going to like me. Now here is a power, a mighty power that can do everything for you. Why would it want you to be poor? You know, why would it want you to be poor? It wouldn't. Think of those things. Don't be poor. Charles Fillmore, the founder of Unity, which is a wonderful teaching, by the way. Rhoda, you do Daily Word, don't you? It's a wonderful teaching. Charles Fillmore stood up one time and said, it is a sin to be poor. It's a sin to be poor. Why is it a sin to be poor? You're not using your God-given talents. You're not opening up your toolbox. You're not using all these wonderful things. That's a sin to do. You know, you have it all in front of you. Use all those things. Use all those things. It's wonderful to sit around and talk about this power and talk about God and get, oh, isn't that wonderful? God loves me. But if you don't do something with that, there's no God. Unless you can demonstrate God, there's no God. It's a myth. It's a happy little thing to say, you know. Oh yes, I'm religious. I go to church. I talked to my niece today. She went on about somebody was getting ready to make their transition and decided not to have chemotherapy. And I said, well, I would never, at the present moment, I would not want to do chemotherapy. If anything happened to me, I would say, oh, thank you very much. I'm adjusted to this, and I'm not afraid of death. And she said, yes, but people are so afraid of death. They're so afraid of this. I said, Courtney, where is your religion? She is the head soprano at the Pine Street Methodist Church in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania. And she believes and is afraid of death. Where did your religion go? If you're afraid of death, what good did religion do you?
I find that to be the case of a lot of really religious people. A lot. They're really afraid of death.
They're afraid of death, yes. So then they say, oh, I better get up on Sunday morning and go to church because, oh my, God's going to get me for this one. God's not going to get you. You know what God's going to do? God's going to give you. God's not going to get you. God's going to give you. God's going to give you the kingdom of heaven. What is the kingdom of heaven? The kingdom of heaven is peace, joy, love, happiness. That's what you're heir to. But yet you think you're heir to suffering, to fear, to worry, to sickness. You're not heir to any of those things. That's race mind. You notice I always point outside. It's because it's the outside. That's where race mind is. Race mind very seldom happens in this room. And when it does, I stop it. But I stop race mind all the time. Yes, Mary?
Could you talk a little bit about, because the thing that I'm thinking about is that in Buddhism, one of the Four Noble Truths is, and this is the odd thing, is that life is suffering, but once you understand that, then you don't have to suffer. But one of the Four Noble Truths of Buddhism is life is suffering.
Yes.
So could you talk about that a little bit?
Why they think that's so important to suffer?
Or, well,
you see,
it could connect to what you're saying because there's that odd thing. Life is suffering, but once you understand that, then
yes,
you don't have to suffer.
You don't have to. You can get off the wheel. As soon as you realize that, you don't have to do
that. But if you don't think it's suffering, I'm wondering if you disagree with this. If you don't think it's suffering and that everything comes easy, that there is no traffic, there is no bounce check, there is no... Then when that happens, you suffer. But if you understand that these things happen, then they happen, you don't suffer when they happen.
Yes.
Well, that's not what you're saying.
That's not what I'm saying exactly. But what you're... See if I can do this for you. That's a belief. And yes, the Buddhists do believe that, because many people believe that we are here to be ground up. When I say ground up, you know the idea of a mill, and it grinds and grinds till the flour is so fine and nice. Many people think by suffering that eventually you'll get rid of everything. And you'll be nothing but pure flower or pure life or whatever. But you don't have to do it that way. That is a one way to do it, and you can choose that way to do it. But you can choose to go through life completely painless. Completely painless. See, we believe in pain because the outside world tells us that all the time. All you have to do is turn on the television and it'll tell you immediately that you're falling apart. You know, and that you need one of their drugs to keep going, you say. Does that help you any? It's a choice. It's always a choice.
So. I understand.
Okay. And you had a question? Yes,
well,
I saw your hand.
One thing I understood on the Buddha suffering is also wanting it to be different than how it is.
Yes.
And that's the definition of suffering.
Yes.
So you're caught in traffic, and you don't want to be caught in traffic. Yes. But then you gave that wonderful example a few weeks ago about, oh, look how abundant everything is.
Yes.
Then everyone can afford the car and the gas.
Yes.
Whatnot.
That's all I see is abundance. But I trained myself to do that. I made up my mind to see that. I made up my mind always to see beauty, to see love. You know. I made up my mind to do that. So because I made up my mind to do that, I see that because I don't judge by appearances.
Well,
when Buddha was younger, he never knew suffering. Everything was wonderful and great to him. When he realized that there was suffering and pain out there, that's what started his enlightenment, because he knew that that was not supposed to be.
Yes. He knew that that was not supposed to be. And that's what you have to make your mind believe. You see, here again, your mind is a tool, you see. You are not your mind. Your mind is yours. You can use your mind to stop that. To stop anything in your life and to build any life that you want to build. And it's absolutely wonderful. And so are you. And so am I. And there ends the lesson. Thank you. Thank you.